Bienvenidos a Data Latam, donde exploramos la industria de datos en Latinoamérica.
Hello, Franz. How are you doing?
Hi, Diego. Fine. Thank you very much.
Why don't we get into some context of or about the cool conversation that we're going to have now, right? I think that we've been talking about this in the last podcasts, but I would love to get your point of view, Franz, on, I think we come from a world of a digital transformation that a lot of companies have gone through that created a lot of data assets in companies. And now we're in the face of a data transformation of companies. Companies have all those digital assets now, and then they can start making sense out of all of that. What do you think about that? And then we get to move on with.
Right. So I think that the best way is to head right into the interview for that, Diego. I agree with you. We are in a sort of a next phase where people now have to use the data that they have collected, and not everybody knows how to do that. And some people are even a little bit afraid, maybe, what it means for their organizations or even them personally, because the context is shifting, is changing, and they need to hold on to something and to hopefully some others, which is where I believe that community in data and data science is so important, right? When we feel a little bit lost or when we sort of don't see the end of the tunnel, it is one of those fields where there's this huge community out there that extends their hands and actually take you on board to go with that. And Sam, I think that you are one of the people that helped create that. So please, if you would start by just letting us know where you are right now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that very flattering intro. It's a testament to the community. So my name is Sam Towett. I am located in Charlottesville, Virginia today on the East Coast, and it is gorgeous outside. I think we might even be getting a little bit of spring today.
Nice, nice, nice. And Sam, why don't you tell us a bit before we dive into this story and what we're going to be discussing, why don't you tell us what's your background? How did you end up where you are now, and what's your history, what you studied, what has been your path?
Yeah, definitely. This is probably going to be very atypical for some of the folks that you've interviewed before. But so I work at RStudio and I do partnerships at RStudio, which is just a fancy way of saying I get to work with data scientists and R users all over the world, and I get to hear about what they're doing. So the way I got here is actually very non-traditional. And I actually say it's almost 100% because of the community. Back in the day, I studied social psychology in college. I do not have a PhD. I do not have a master's degree. I studied psychology, and that was where I first got a taste of R and a taste of statistics. And after I graduated college, I really enjoyed the programming side of things. I really liked being able to make sense of my surroundings by being able to take what I could get with the data and being able to deliver insights. And those insights, you know, could be anything from like how my garden is doing to looking at some of my favorite, you know, hip hop lyrics and looking at some word analyses. And so it started off as very much this is a kind of fun thing, but I am by no means a data scientist or a programmer or anything like that with a psychology background. And so I was able to learn about various R ladies and user groups around the area, and I got involved. And that was where I was able to discover that there are a lot of people similar to me that maybe don't have a software engineering background, but want to do something that helps others make more informed decisions and connect with others. That was where I really found open source tooling, specifically R, to really be the glue that holds it all together. Here is a free software, anyone's able to use it, and that's the goal of it, is that anyone should be able to use it. You know, you don't have to have a background. You don't have to have the funds to do it. It's just, here's a free tool that you're able to deliver insights on and share those insights and collaborate with others. So that's a really long-winded story of how I started to get involved in R. And I learned, you know, I started making some dashboards and some graphs, and I wanted to make more of a difference, you know, by doing more R Ladies work and linking up with local universities, which was a little hard for me because I did not have, you know, a lot of university experience, but then to show up as, you know, a community user, you know, helping to learn data science and help out with data science. I eventually got involved with the R Consortium and some of their diversity, accessibility, and inclusion initiatives, totally by stumbling on it on Twitter. I saw, you know, a call for, we want to hear everyone's voice, come to these meetings. And I've been going to them for the past 3 years. And I find it as just a fascinating learning experience, both on, you know, all the cool things you can do with R, with Shiny, with Python, and all of the things that people in general are able to do together. I've seen people analyze, you know, open data initiatives that cities have put together, or, you know, looking at more, you know, moving on from, you know, looking at, you know, analyzing, you know, hip hop lyrics to actually putting together, looking at like crime data. And I remember seeing some folks in Charlottesville looking at crime data, and the city was shocked by it in a good way, in a good way. And so being able to actually make a difference without having to be an expert was what really, if anything, blew me away. And getting to hear what others are doing and getting to work with folks like you all at Expantia for the past few years and seeing everything that you're all doing has just been a fascinating experience.
Wow. It's, you know, I want to get then into the different profiles of people working with dating companies, but in these initial phases that you mentioned from, I don't know, being in our consortium or our ladies, what were the different types of profiles that you found there? Where were they coming from? I want to get a sense, or get the audience a sense, of the diversity of people that arrive to these forums and the interests and what they do with data.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating question. And I can answer it partially. And the reason is that because imposter syndrome is real. It is a real thing and we all deal with it. And so this is something I personally am starting to realize, that at first when I would go to many of these meetups, even if I'm the one giving a presentation, I remember thinking, these are all experts. These are all software engineers. Everyone's an expert. I'm here because I learned it by following, you know, an R Markdown website online. And so I'm just now beginning to realize, you know, all of these different profiles, and that we all come to it with such a vast wealth of experience. And experience is very much not what you learned in school or what you're doing in the field. It's very much what you are able to contribute, you know? And so what the folks that I've dealt with are, I mean, I would very much consider myself a beginner, very much still learning. We're all constantly still learning. So the folks that I've dealt with and that I've learned from are anyone from people that just want to learn something new and they want to make a difference. And so they're getting involved with their community. Maybe they're helping doing some consulting online. Maybe they just want to, you know, help people, you know, break away from that death grip that Excel has on them, and they want to, you know, move beyond pivot tables. So there's that, you know. And then there's folks that maybe are inside of an organization. One really common experience that I've had and that I've seen others do, which is interesting to me, and maybe Franz and Diego, you might have a better idea of what it means, is I've seen a lot of folks that'll be in an organization. Maybe they learned R, they learned Python through open source schooling, through university, through, you know, meetups. Then they move into an enterprise organization, whether it's their first data science job or their 20th, and they loved R, they used it, but then they realize they need to help share those insights. You know, they need to really emphasize that reproducibility aspect. Or they come into an enterprise organization with open source tools and the IT team is like, oh, heck no, you're putting this open source tool in production. And so I've seen a lot of, I don't know, it's like jumping, it's, you know, jumping that, you know, from being the casual user to, I still consider a casual user, but inside of an enterprise environment. And so that's something that I think has been really fascinating is the, you know, these, and I consider these as like the data, the producers, the folks that get the data, they play with it and they deliver those insights that they then need to share, reproduce. They need to make them very durable so that others can, you know, dive in and, you know, maybe challenge those insights, come up with their own, expand on them. And so I'd say we're all, almost all of us here, you know, have, you know, sunk our teeth in the data. And so I think a big challenge is we've also all been on the other side of seeing a beautiful dashboard and saying, you know, well, what does this have to do with me? And so, you know, then there's the data consumers. And I think one thing that I've seen just through, you know, working with so many different organizations is that oftentimes someone may start off as a data consumer, or they think like, oh, I, you know, don't need to program, I don't need to actually, you know, develop a ggplot. But as soon as you start seeing, you know, really reproducible and durable code, you start to then kind of slip back into saying like, oh, well, how do I change this? How do I build on this? And so we all, I think there's very much, you know, the data consumer, data, it's not a producer because they're not actually creating the data, but the insight producers, I guess we could call them, that there's, everyone goes back and forth between them. You know, you may start to consume data, but then you definitely are going to start, you know, digging into it with these tools that are available. Or maybe you're digging into the tools and you start to being able to take a step back and, you know, look at the so what of all of this. And so that's, it's fascinating to see that, especially with open source tools, that's so, you can see what everyone's doing. There's no black box. It's so transparent that it lets that transition from, you know, someone might say, you know, you're an early entry level, you know, you're early level, you're still learning how to, you know, kind of make sense of things. We all go back to that and we all keep doing that. And so that's what I think is just so fascinating, that we all consume data, but we also all eventually go back to our roots and our data scientists, you know, at some way, shape or form.
That's fascinating. Thanks. And Sam, in all that, what have you personally been working on in the past few years? So in this entire landscape,
yeah, some of my projects, oh gosh, I love R. I've always been, you know, a chart person or a table person. So I use R and Python and, you know, I'm trying to dabble a little bit more in other open source tooling, like maybe Julia. I use it for everything from within our studio. I have some, you know, business analytics dashboards that help look at, you know, various engagements with our partners. We do different attribution analyses models for some of our partners. And I'm, you know, different ways of just measuring value that partners provide to the ecosystem, which is very much a very, you know, subjective, you know, measurement. So if anyone has advice on how to, you know, better measure subjective contributions, very interested in that. I also do some tracking through the R Consortium of playing with the Meetup API to see different events, see different users, and then try to just see which groups or different R user groups may be able to collaborate. For example, if there's a nearby group that's doing a lot of spatial analysis, and then there's another group nearby that's maybe doing a lot of consensus or census analysis or population analyses, maybe there's a way for them to swap users, which I could go down, you know, I can talk for hours about how actually everyone moving to this all virtual lifestyle is actually a benefit when it comes to, you know, transmitting information. But yes, yeah, so I do, you know, dashboarding through the R Consortium. I do my own dabbling with R Studio of some of our sales processes. And then personally, I have a Shiny app that tracks my garden, and I've used it for the past couple of years, and it helps me just know when to plant things and to monitor some seed things. Very not related to business, but just another example of how kind of data science permeates everyone's life.
Wow, I didn't know that you were playing so deep into using all the tools. This is pretty cool. This is
a little bit of a nerd.
yeah, lovely, that's... lovely. And then being a psychologist and thinking communities, some sociology, some psychology, and then some data. I think it's a pretty cool mix. And that brings me to, so we have these open communities, right? And by the way, I've heard a couple of times from different people, and Our Ladies, by the way, I think it's an amazing community. But one guest that we had in the past talked about how great it was, that community where she could go and then ask any question and get good answers without the fear of, oh, I don't know if I should ask this type of thing. If I can ask, how do you think that community has been able to create that, such a safe environment? And then how can that be replicated into companies where this data literacy issue is also a problem, right? Or something that needs to be solved.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating question. I think at our core, we all want to learn more. And by learn more, whether that means learn more skills, learn more about each other, learn more about how we exist in society, I think we're all striving to learn more. And if we accept that, and it's not even accept, it's like if we're all trying to learn more, there is no way we know everything. So if we approach, at least that's what I've been doing, is approaching it as, I absolutely do not know everything and I am here to learn from others. And so that's a great way to learn about just how to interact with others in the community, if it's, as opposed to being, I'm not even hostile. I've dealt with some other software, software in general, it's different. It's intimidating. Computers are hard, if people didn't realize. And so it's, if we all realize, we all started off as a beginner somewhere. We all have no idea what we're doing most of the time, let's be honest. And if we just approach it with, being humble and kind, as this is a way to begin and learn, and I don't think necessarily if we all mean well, a mistake is just a learning experience. And so that's one thing I think is incredible about how Our Ladies and other organizations, or they just foster communication and collaboration. So, and that's one thing I love about us being digital for the past year or so. For example, I was actually just went to an Our Ladies Timbuktu meetup. I'm in Virginia. So I would have never participated in anything like that ever, but being able to show up at various meetups online, be welcomed, and to know that, you can contribute and your voice is probably going to be heard, is just a really empowering way to, get involved. The people are by far the nicest I've ever met. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just because we love open source languages, so we love sharing information, so we view that as kind of like giving each other gifts, but it's just been a phenomenal experience. I never would have done data science or any of that if it wasn't for the people there saying, oh, totally, come do it, you have no idea what you're doing, me neither, let's figure it out together. And that's just been a really humbling and wonderful experience for me. And because of that, I want to try to foster that for others. I want to, I by no means am an expert, but what little knowledge that I have, if someone wants to learn something or, collaborate with me on something, that's awesome. Why not?
And this is, by the way, a brainstorm between the three of us. I would love to get also your points of view, Franz, but I don't know if this is about some rules that become part of these communities, such as Our Ladies, or if it's the spirit of open source, right? And then it's this collaborative environment where things get solved as a team and together. Mm-hmm. But I've seen sometimes these companies, and with Expantia, we have the pleasure of talking with different type of organizations, and they're transiting this path to become more data-driven, and we collaborate with them, we help them, and we work with them on these, but bring this spirit of open source or communities like Our Ladies now into companies that are trying to do this transformation. So is there any any learning, any best practice, anything that happens in open source and Our Lady that can be taken into these type of organizations that you can think of?
Absolutely. One thing I've seen a lot of going on in many organizations, and this was one thing I started doing at my previous company, which was a very small team, is that a lot of folks are creating their own little communities within organizations. And so, for example, I'll see, you know, it could be a data science center of excellence. It could be a lunch, a brown bag lunch. I remember I learned what Hugo was during a brown bag lunch at my previous company, where it was, oh, here's an interesting way to create websites. And, you know, by having those small, intimate sessions where by no means did I walk away saying, you know, I'm an expert in Hugo, but I walked away saying, Hugo is a thing. I guess I should go learn about that. That seems really interesting. And being able to have these small groups where, you know, you're inside, you know, there's this community of trust already. You can then, you know, fall down, mess stuff up. Nothing is going to break if it's, you know, don't do it in production, obviously. You know, do it, you know, in like a shared safe environment. And having these internal communities is phenomenal because you're able to then have these, whether it be, you know, data-driven insights or just, you know, adoption of open source, you're able to have that permeate through the company and have it make more of a difference than just a, oh, here's a casual get together of some nerds eating lunch, which by no means, I love to be one of those nerds eating lunch learning things, but getting folks where it's like, oh, now we all, maybe, you know, someone gave a demo on a Flex dashboard. And then that starts to permeate through, you know, oh, someone realizes this is helpful in another department. And then maybe they start using Flex dashboards. And maybe there's more of, you know, a cross department collaboration. Maybe the organization doesn't even use R at all, but has an R book club. And then people maybe start adopting R into some of their smaller projects. And it starts to really, you know, get a foothold. And once others realize, you know, just the ability to, you know, share and collaborate, I think then it starts to get more of a stronghold within the department. It doesn't have to be just, you know, the data science team doing their data science and AI and machine learning. It could be the finance team that maybe wants to expedite some of their, you know, database connections. It could be the DevOps team that wants to have a faster way to measure how they've been parsing logs. And so just different ways, if you use it as not as the primary tool, but use it as an augmentor. So, you know, to help make your life easier at work, and you have those smaller communities that adopt those smaller changes, it's able to make a bigger difference within your organization. I mean, you show one tool that makes one person's life a little bit easier, guaranteed they will show that to other folks and it will have that chain reaction.
One thing that we have found, Diego, Sam, is that setting up something that has continuity helps a lot. So yes. Together with Mauro Lepore, at one of our engagements, we set up something that is called an incubator. So the incubator, the data science incubator, is a meeting every week, you know, at such time, such day, but it is always there. And people come in, people come out, depending on where they are. Maybe they have something they're working on and it's relevant to them. Maybe for a time it's not. Mm-hmm. And I know that Mauro implemented that in another company where he's working right now as well, to the same effect. Mm-hmm. And it becomes something that is known. One of the main challenges, but also goals, is to make it a safe place. It's a safe place. You come, yeah. You hear information, you can ask whatever you want, you can show whatever you want, right? Exactly. If something cool came out. And that really helps a lot.
And I think creating that safe space is something that can be done necessarily anywhere beyond, just in a programming community, setting up, you know, a safe environment. It could be, and that's something I've definitely learned from some of these meetup organizations, or just being in various meetups, or like, I know some universities, they do a lot of like women in data science conferences. I've, you know, been involved with those. And so it's a great way that I've seen is just right front and center, set up those expectations, you know, say like, we want people to contribute. We very much, you know, want to create a space where you feel comfortable contributing. And so that is tricky to do. It's not just, you know, oh, the extroverts contribute, the introverts will stay silent or email. And so it's, you know, whether it be, I've seen meeting etiquette where it'll be like, oh, if you have something to say, you raise your hand on Zoom, or people will say, oh, if we're doing questions, it's going to be all after as opposed to just interrupting. And so I think by just setting up some of those, you know, having someone in the room that's just helping to organize and make sure that everyone feels safe and kind of reinforce that, you know, that's the reason of why we're all here, helps people. You know, I would not have shown up to an Our Ladies meetup knowing barely what R is without someone saying, you know, that's what the point of this meeting is. You know, we're all here because we don't know anything and we want to be able to have this safe space.
Yeah. And yeah, well, this is such a topic. I think that we could double and triple click here, but when we see companies, and again, usually sometimes, I don't want to say usually, but sometimes you have companies that are trying to transit this data innovation path. But again, you're inside the company, this is work. And then just showing up super safe, it may have some, I don't know, some issues around that need to get solved. But again, I think it's great points, both Franz and Sam, on building these safe places where people can share, play, have fun, do things, and then show some values and projects. I think it's fantastic. I was going to ask, again, to both, what have you seen, if you think about companies, maybe, and Sam, in your case, have you seen any cool case of a data transformation of a company and some of the key things that happen to allow for this transformation to happen?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I can think of, this is why I love my job and why I love the R community and why I love getting to work with partners, because this is what I do all day, is hear about the cool things that organizations were able to do via their own digital transformation. One that the two that really immediately strike off the bat for me is thinking about in New Zealand, where with the recent COVID epidemic, I've seen, you know, with COVID, the blessing was there was a ton of data all over the place. Not very many of us knew what to do with it, knew the validity of the data, knew how to deliver impactful insights. And I've seen in New Zealand, a couple different organizations using open source tooling were able to get access to a myriad of data sets within an organization and build a model that actually mapped all of COVID, predicted all of COVID, made that publicly accessible for tracking COVID. Granted, New Zealand's a smaller country than like the United States or anything. And so they were able to actually not only track all of COVID in New Zealand and the, you know, the cause, like where it was all spreading, but they were also able to, because of that, immediately stop the spread. I remember seeing the numbers, you know, of new cases once they were able to really wrap their, you know, fully digitize the spread of that, which was phenomenal and on a smaller scale. And then this organization was able to then have this dashboard that was, you know, here's the New Zealand COVID. We were able to make all of this data accessible, make sense of the data. And now that we've got it slowed down. Another example, I think, is, and I very much do not want to be, you know, talking too much about our studio because I'm here all day, every day, but it's the recent Iceland story about how in the city of Reykjavik, they were able to make sense of their numbers of tourism, people visiting their gorgeous bathhouses, and they were able to optimize that so that they could then have, you know, using their, you know, city modeling data, they were able to then say, these are the best times to go to the bathhouses. These are the best times for vacationing. And they were able to pretty much redefine and make the most out of their tourist exports. And so those are examples of, you know, public sector. I think public sector, just because it affects so many people and it, you know, actually affects the daily lives of individuals, Those are some fascinating examples of data-driven processes. I've even seen, you know, in some of these pharma organizations, the process of clinical trials moving through the pipeline with speeds, with, you know, because clinical trials is no joke. That takes a lot of work at every single point. And so seeing those processes speed up because of them, you know, making things more, whether it be automated or more optimized, I think those are some fascinating examples.
Yeah. And yeah, you bring these two concepts. So automation, optimization, it's not only about the science piece, right? And thinking about a completely new thing, which is great and cool and always welcomed.
Totally.
But it's also about optimization and automation and allowing things to happen faster once you have all the data, and then you can automate processes that will bring all this data automatically to the hands of the right people. I think that's, there's a lot of power and value on that. I completely agree.
Absolutely. And the delivery aspect of it. It's, you know, you could do the stuff, but then you actually getting the, you know, getting those insights to the right people in a way for them to make the right decisions, I think has been immensely impacted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, let's play the Back to the Future movie. We talked about the past and the present a little bit.
Yeah.
How do you see the future? Let's take the DeLorean to the future. And how do you see the future if you think about, again, data, what can happen at different levels in organizations, in countries, right? Mm-hmm. So what's going to be the impact of communities? How should we work with communities? How should we work with communities internally? What's going to happen in the future with this? What's your view on that?
My prediction slash if I had a magic wand and could influence the future is that it would be a lot more transparency, not only in the data itself, but in the processes surrounding the data and the decisions that came from the data as well, decisions around the processes. So I could see, and by transparency, I mean also more open source tools that others are able to make their own insights. So I could see more Python interoperability with R, maybe pulling in more Julia, maybe pulling in other different sources of, you know, languages, tools, programs. And so I think, you know, collaborating, even if it's worth more, you know, cloud services or, you know, more of those big, you know, drag and drop organizations. I think the key is going to be transparency in showing these processes so that we're then able to fine tune them and deliver more valuable insights, I think. So that, you know, if we have data and data processes and data pipelines that aren't black box, that are more durable and more reproducible, I think we're able to then create more agile and robust solutions.
Look, I love that. I agree with the idea of transparency and that. And then we've been talking with a lot of, again, companies, organizations, usually data governance. And I don't like the word governance, right? It's so governmental, but enablement. So you talked about transparency, but then usually there's this layer of who has access to what. But we all know that as better the access is to data for different people in an organization, more data innovation can happen. But what have you seen? I also like and would love this data transparency to go at the next level. How do you see data governance or data enablement moving in that direction as well?
Yeah, I could see it really going either way. I could see data governance because with more access to data and more access to tools to analyze the data, we still want to make sure that the data itself is reflective. You know, these insights are only as accurate as the data itself is. We've heard all of the horror stories about data that is not representative or that might be skewed or might, you know, have some sort of implicit bias in that. And that is something that we need to start untangling by looking at some of our existing data sources. Is that a solution? Do I know how to do that? No, but I think by having more of an eye to data governance towards, you know, making sure the data is coming from the right, from the right sources, that it is properly sourced. You know, there's so many different ways that we can source data these days. And so there's a lot of, you know, I've seen everything from packages for like validation to more robust data sourcing tools to, you know, teams specifically focused on, you know, specifically data governance, which is fascinating. I've seen an emergence of, you know, if you had your 10 years ago, a data science team would be the data scientist. And that would, you know, very much like a startup or something. Now, when you look at a data science team, it is the data scientist, the possibly a business analyst. And then you've got your data governance person. They may be working with, you know, GDPR people, or they may be solely focusing on, you know, the integrity of the data. Then you get your data architects. And so it's become much more ephemeral and, you know, all encompassing, that it's no longer, you know, each part is its own, you know, part and parcel. It's that it's more, you know, the data, the way the data works with others, the outcome of the data, those processes, the storage, and that's all now getting more of a keen eye to it. And so that's something that I could definitely see more data governance down the line, and that, you know, hopefully that could, you know, be in line with the transparency aspect. I hope so. It should be. And so that's where I would, again, magic wand, what I would like to see.
I have to add, Sam, that I like the word data governance, right? Because I hear governance. Yeah, because I hear governance, I think about democratization. I think about rules and regulations, the things that make us safe, that allow us to operate within boundaries. Having clear boundaries can be very nice, right? Knowing what to do and what not to do.
Yeah.
So it's semantics, but yeah, I like that word because that is the concept that it brings to mind.
There you go. I like that. If I think of it less as bureaucracy and more as a guarantee of safety, yeah. I like that. I'll keep that in mind.
So Sam, I you know, we could be, and hopefully we will continue to talk for hours, but not in this particular recording, not in this particular podcast. So to get to a closing, what would you say are the people, the communities that you are following? Right? Maybe through blogs. And by what means? Do you read blogs? Do you read Twitter? What channels do you use to follow people and to find new people? Like, for instance, our ladies in Timbuktu.
Yeah, exactly. I've been using, I use blogs. I follow a lot of the R Consortium blogs. I follow Meetup. I follow Our Ladies. I follow people might post a project on LinkedIn. I am trying not to use Twitter as much. Granted, sometimes I still use Twitter, but Twitter is, for a lack of better words, you know, Twitter is where ideas go to either die or get fought over. But I would say I follow a lot of different blogs, a lot of different products. Like, for example, I'm now learning more about Kubernetes. So I started following a different, you know, Kubernetes blogs. And I'm just learning more about different ways to integrate. And so that's a great way for me to kind of broaden that ecosystem of tools, of resources, of, you know, most importantly, of opinions. That's what I want to be able to do, is get a vast diversity of, you know, various folks' opinions and on tools, how to use tools, on data science, and really just to, you know, try to make sense of it all.
Great. Sam, we really look forward to seeing you again in our Studio Conf 2022. Yeah, anybody listening, watch out. It's in July in Washington. So we'll be there. Sam will be there. And it would be great to continue this conversation there as well. And yeah, thank you so much. And we hope to have you again as a guest on this podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's been a blast. And it's been a blast working with you all for the past couple of years. And I definitely see us doing many more of these.
Fantastic.
Bye. Gracias por acompañarnos en nuestra exploración del mundo de ciencia de datos en este Data Latam Podcast. Cada dos semanas encontrarás un nuevo episodio en datalatam.com o iTunes. Si te gustó este podcast, déjanos comentarios en Facebook.